You are listening to the KLC Preaching Podcast, a platform for discussions about Christian preaching in North America. This podcast is a ministry of the Kyle Lake Center for Effective Preaching at Baylor University's George W. Truett Theological Seminary in Waco, Texas.
Well, we want to welcome you to another edition of the KLC Preaching Podcast. My name is Jared Alcantara, and I am Professor of Preaching, Director of the Kyle Lake Center for Effective Preaching here at Baylor University's George W. Truett Theological Seminary. It's a joy to be with you, whether you're checking in the audio podcast version of this or the YouTube channel version. We're thrilled that you have joined us, and I am most grateful to welcome our guest, Dr. Alejandro Mandez, who is now a multi-ethnic church consultant, but formerly was the executive director of All People Ministry for the EFCA, the Evangelical Free Church of America. Welcome, Dr. Mandez.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here on campus also.
Oh, yes. It's a delight to have you. You're a native Tejano from Laredo, or born in Corpus.
I'm a Texicano.
Texicano, that's right. Born in Corpus, raised in Laredo, then now living in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And you, on account of your work with church planting, with directing initiatives with the EFCA, or EFCA, we say in Spanish, have been all over the world and have connected with different people. So before we get into what you do now and what you've done over the last few years, let me go back a little bit.
Okay.
One of the things I like to ask Christian leaders, pastors, preachers, is to just tell the story of their call. So talk to us about your conversion and your call to do vocational ministry.
So I was raised in Laredo to a very large Hispanic family, very large. And, I had a captain from the Air Force share the gospel with me. And man, it was like lightning. I mean, I was in high school and it had a tremendous impact on me. And I just started reading the Bible and going to Bible studies and kind of surprised some of my family members. But I told them, hey, I'm not chasing girls. I'm not doing drugs. I just want to know Jesus and follow him. And they said, well, carry on. So the Air Force base that was in Laredo was closed down. And so they told me, if you want to keep on being disciples, you should come to Austin, Texas, as if that was the only place to make disciples. But it worked out. But the thing with Laredo is kind of its own little bubble because nobody else is close by. So when I went to Austin, Texas, to University of Texas, it was like a culture shock of the max. I mean, I think I cried for almost two solid weeks just because everybody was growing so fast and everybody looked different and talked different. I think that's one of the places where I developed an appetite for a cultural adventurer. And I learned, even though I was different, if I loved people and learned and watched, I could have an impact. And so I think that was actually one of making disciples, particularly being around so many different people. I think that really cut deeply in a good way in my life.
Well, you talking about your experience of going from Laredo to Austin made me think of many of the students who come to Baylor or Truett who are raised in the Valley, South Texas, along the border. They come to Waco and they say, I think I'm still in Texas. but all of a sudden, they're the only one who looks like them, or there's just a couple of people who look like them. It sounds like that was your experience in Austin. And then how about seminary? As you went on to further schooling and you decided, okay, God's called me to do X. Talk to us about how that developed.
Well, it was a similar thing, but a little more maturity. Married to a great wife. Went with two kids. We decided we weren't going to have any more. God decided otherwise. We ended up with five. But, you know, when I was there, I think there were less than nine Hispanics, Texas, American Hispanics. And it was odd. There were 150 African-Americans, and it was cool. And you know what? The African-American dean was actually my dean also. Mm-hmm. So even though I felt like I was outsider, all of a sudden the African-American and the Hispanics were connecting more and more. So again, that was sort of seminal to just developing an attitude and aptitude for being multicultural. And I learned so much from just being around the African-American brothers and appreciated so much of their culture. And, you know, there's so many things that were the same. I mean, Hispanics are very community-oriented. So are the African-Americans. The food was very similar also. I mean, whether it's chicharrones or chitlins, I mean, hey, it's just fried a different way, you know? So you start developing an aptitude and a friendship and an appetite for the different cultural issues. And you hear the voice of God a little bit differently in every culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, so after seminary, you started church planting. You were in Texas. You were based in San Antonio, but you were also planting churches along the way. And then a little more than 10 years ago, you decided to join... 20 years ago. Wow. Okay. You decided to join the executive team in leadership of the Evangelical Free Church of America. Now, you had launched some interesting, fascinating, I would say exciting initiatives there. I know that we could talk all day about that, but tell us a little bit about the initiatives you lost and why they were important to you.
So when I first went to the national office, and it was along I-35, but in Minneapolis, I didn't move there. We decided that it would be better for the executive director, or the director of Hispanic ministry, to be in a city predominantly Hispanic. So it meant more traveling. But one of the things that a lot of travel helped me realize is that there were so many ethnic and immigrant pastors who were gifted and called that didn't have the formal theological training to bring health and growth to their churches. So working with a team, we developed a non-formal theological training that we did in English and in Spanish, and it really took off, had a great impact actually from that. Maybe 1,300 to 1,500 students went through it. And in the long run, out of that came probably 120 churches. It was very impactful. In fact, after a while, we had African and we had Asian people that were going through that to get their theological training. And they started kidding me about why was I called the Hispanic director when I was working with all these different ethnic and immigrant groups. So they changed my title, and then they changed it again. But basically, Gateway just really helped the pastors to develop their spiritual foundation, biblical foundation, literacy. Mm. And then there was the Immigrant Hope.
Yeah, say more about that and what led you to launch that.
Well, so many of the churches would have immigrants who did not have their documentation. And there were a lot of people. There's probably two or three times more immigrants that are here legally but need other documents to be able to move on to citizenship. Mm-hmm. So we kind of weird out on the undocumented and don't realize that there's so many others that need services. And even a lot of the undocumented have just overstayed their visa. And what people don't realize is overstaying your visa is an administrative violation, not a felony violation. Hmm. So some of it is just helping people understand. You know, obviously, I believe in the rule of law, but we need to make sure we understand the law to be able to. So actually, our churches, and not just the Hispanic ones, the English-speaking Anglo ones, we're able to realize that, hey, we can serve our community in a way that will help the community deal with the issues that they need to be dealt with. So it was more than just the legal issues. It also was, you know, English as a second language, citizenship. Actually, it really rejuvenated some churches. There was a church in Brooklyn that had like five different services and different Egyptian and Chinese, and they said, this is a one program that brought us all together, that helped us to be one. We're working on the Great Commission, the Great Commandment, and transforming our community. So the immigrant, and it's really multiplied, and I helped start it. I helped bring people together, but, you know, it's one of those things that's even bigger than me, and there's other great people that have really been adding their secret sauce to it. So I may have started and brought it together and got the right people in the bus, but it's an amazing thing, and it really helped the church.
Wow, that must be exciting to see work take off, see other people take the baton and bring it to new places. Now, you mentioned this. I want to touch on this. You talked about Great Commission, Great Commandment. When I've heard you preach or heard you lead workshops or do other sessions, you talk about being GC2, Great Commission, Great Commandment. Now, that is part of what led you to write this book.
Yeah.
And so the book is called Embracing the New Samaria by Alejandro Mandez. You released it in what year? Was it 2022?
2021.
So tell us a little bit more about what led to the writing of the book and why it was so important to you to write it.
Well, I'll go ahead and start at the point where you mentioned the GC2, which I really realized it was a GC3. Mm. Because so oftentimes people are either on the Great Commission or the Great Commandment, and that becomes, you know, justice, and that becomes, you know, Bible literacy. When we don't realize that Jesus never wore two hats. He was only on the Great Commission, the Great Commandment. But the reason the third GC came in is because of great community. Mm. Whenever you see Jesus, he is causing transformation. And that's because for him, it wasn't Great Commandment, Great Commission. It was the same thing. And so all you had then was people being trained to be disciples who were also being loved and exercising compassion and issues of justice. And that transforms the community. So the book was really an encouragement for people to recalibrate their vision. John chapter 4, verse 35, open your eyes and look on the harvest. America is changing dramatically, and it's not just about immigrants. Mm-hmm. It's also about young people. It's talking about poverty and other ethnic groups that have been marginalized. And I strongly believe, this one friend told me this, his name is Veshili, he says, God is at work in the margins. Mm, mm. And when you look at the book of Acts, that's certainly the case. Mm, mm. So how do we in America recalibrate our vision and make sure that we're holistic in terms of our great commandment, great commission, great community?
Mm. Now, I want to shift gears for a moment. As you know, this is a preaching podcast, so the KLC Preaching Podcast, which means I have to ask some questions about preaching. It's in my contract somewhere. But I'm looking forward to asking these questions, especially given your background, your training, your skills, your expertise. First question has to do with how we read the Bible. Mm. We're planning to release this podcast right around Christmas time, beginning of December, which means that preachers are going to be looking at those birth narrative, those nativity story texts. What do Hispanics, what do Latinos, Latinas see in the nativity story that other preachers might not see, that you think would be helpful for anyone who's going to get up and preach about that story?
Yeah, you know, like you read in Exodus how the family gets around the table and they ask the child, you know, kid is supposed to ask, what does this mean, Grandpa? I see a lot of similarity between the Hispanic culture and the Christmas story. They have a thing that they called La Posada, where they actually live out the story of how Jesus and Mary are walking through the city asking for a house and a place to stay. And so they go to one house, they go to another house, they have another house. And in these houses, they'll stop and have a meal and talk about the story and about each other. Finally, they get to the place where they're allowed into the inn. And all of this is done with the family and with the kids. And so it's kind of permeates the whole thinking of it. And I just like the way that the Hispanic community does that. And, you know, one of the things I think we need to also factor into our thinking when we're talking about Hispanics and the issue of migration is that Jesus was a refugee. And he was fleeing violence, not from Egypt to Israel, but from Israel to Egypt. So one of the things that we need to really understand is immigrants are all over the Bible. I mean, Jesus was an immigrant twice. The Father sent him down to earth, and he fled from, you know, Israel to Egypt. And, you know, it's really, really important for us to understand the whole issue of migration, the issue of loving the stranger, which is rooted in Exodus. So in some ways, we need to calibrate our vision on how we think about the immigrants among us and understand the government will at some day make a decision on what to do with the immigrants. But regardless of what is going off of there, we need to get off of our little party over here on which are we, Democrat or Republican, and realize it's not the elephant or the donkey, it's the Lion of Judah. Mm, mm. And so while the government is making their decision, We don't need permission to love, to evangelize, to share the gospel, and to disciple. And if for some reason, maybe they go back equipped and trained, and we can follow some of their work there and support them there. So it's changing our attitude about how we see people. Huh?
Yeah, in many ways, it's changing the things that we see in Scripture, too. I remember going to a refugee camp when I was 20. I'd never been to a refugee camp before. I was in another country, refugee camp, displaced people. But I spoke with a person there who was a devout Christ follower who said, Jesus was a refugee. He understands me. So just those kinds of layers or those kinds of vantage points add some texture and depth to a story that we might become too familiar, so familiar with it that we don't start to see all the many beautiful dimensions of it. Now, you talked about immigration. Just as we wrap up, I'm thinking of preachers of every level. So we're going to have preachers who are just starting out, people who are more advanced, preachers of different backgrounds, races, ethnicities, genders, classes. And so a lot of your answer to this, it's going to be context specific, right? Like, what's the race, ethnicity, gender of the preacher? What about the people? But if you could come up with some general things that you would advise preachers to do when they're preaching about the Bible and immigration, or talking about immigration to their people who are listening to their sermons, what sorts of things come to mind?
Well, very quickly, one of the first things I say, and I almost feel like I have to do it when I speak at any venue, is to say I need everybody to park their politics at the door. And that is not saying that I agree with one side or the other. The fact of the matter is, let's get into what the Bible says about this. And really, the Bible cuts both ways to the different groups. So right away, I say, I believe that the Bible is very clear that we've got to obey our government. There's not a choice of which law do I want to obey or not. But we also need to understand that even the Bible is very clear about loving the immigrant and treating them right. You even have the Bible story of Paul, who is in jail, and he meets an undocumented immigrant runaway slave. And, you know, Paul could have said, well, you're not of my party. But what he does is he loves him, he evangelizes him, he disciples him, and then he writes an eternal letter that we still have, that he wrote some guy named Onesimus that said, hey, you own me. You owe me. You need to treat this guy like a brother. You know, if anything else it is different, we need to change this conversation into a spiritual conversation in which we're listening and make sure that we're looking at God's culture and strategy and not substituting politics for what we believe Jesus wants us to do.
Very quickly, our ideologies can turn into idols, can't they?
And we don't, after a while, we don't even know where those merge or end, and we're afraid to even speak what the scriptures say, because we'll be misunderstood. Don't be afraid.
Well, that's a good word. It made me think of, I think it's Phillips Brooks or P.T. Forsyth who said that courage is that one indispensable quality of preaching that's required of every preacher, a willingness to speak the truth in love, speak truth to power, and also to show courage.
If I could say one thing really quickly.
Of course, yeah.
I think that pastors for a long time wouldn't involve in this conversation. And so we opened the door for the two political parties to speak what
commandeer.
They thought.
Yeah, right. Commandeer
and
the
so now
discussion.
I think pastors are afraid of entering into the conversation because very quickly people are going to start saying, oh, you're that party, you're that party. And that's where we need to say, tell people, check it at the door, let's read what the Bible says. And then courage.
Yes, yeah.
Courage is so important.
Well, I appreciate that. And on that closing thought of courage, just encourage all of you to be courageous preachers. I want to thank you so much to thank Dr. Mondes for joining us today on the KLC Preaching Podcast. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share it. You can hit like, subscribe, and let other folks know about what we're doing. Thanks so much for joining us.
God bless you.